Welcome to the Leadersmith Podcast. My name is Darren Gurdes, and I am so glad that you're here. Today, we're going to be talking about notable quotables, and we're going to be talking about Dwight Eisenhower. Stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdes.
So I've been working on the series of notable quotables for a while now. I have a few in the can, a few in the queue. So we started out by talking about Jim Rohn. He's kind of the grandfather of the self-help movement. We'll be talking about Peter Drucker and Stephen Covey and George Gilder and a few others that are just like luminaries who have a lot of wisdom to share. This one started out almost accidentally. I really have liked and appreciated Dwight Eisenhower. I've read a few books about him, and most of his quotes about leadership are pretty compelling, and it should be. He was the supreme Allied commander in the World War II in Europe, and so he should have something to say about leadership. But the other day, I took my son to Wendy's and then over to the river. There's a little park, and we were just eating outside. And apparently, this is a place where retired veterans gather. I mean, when I say retired, I mean like in the 70 to 80 year old bracket, and they sit and swap war stories, and that's what they do. Well, I was talking to one elderly man who was a Korea and Vietnam vet, and he was telling me about some of his experiences. And between Korea and Vietnam, he's a retired Marine. Between that, he got a job as a security or guard duty for embassies. And before he was in the embassies, he had to go to this guard school. And Eisenhower was president at the time. Eisenhower said he wanted the top four men in his class. He was number three, and so he was guard duty for Eisenhower. And I was asking him, wow, what was that like? What was Eisenhower like? And he said two things. He was really good to his Marines. He loved his Marines. Well, you would hope the Supreme Allied Commander would love his servicemen. He was also a brilliant strategist. Like, he just thought about strategy in such a different way than other people. And that's a function of how he went through the service. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But I want to get into some of his quotes and then just unpack the leadership elements of the quotes. And you've probably heard some of these before. Like, the first one is, pull the string and it will follow wherever you wish. Push it and it will go nowhere at all. And this was Eisenhower talking to some of his commanders, talking about how they should lead, right? If you just push them along, they get all catawonky. They get jumbled. It just doesn't work. But if you pull them, if you lead by example and say, follow me, this is the way, it's just different. They react very differently. Okay, number two, leadership is the art of getting someone else to do something you want done because he wants to do it. Now, part of that sounds manipulative, but everything you're doing in leadership is really manipulative. It is. You're manipulating others. Is it in your interest or is it in the service of others, though? And that's, I think, the dividing line. But there is some manipulation to it. But understanding that if you get him to want to do it, it's going to work out well for you is a brilliant insight. I do this exercise in class where I try to find the biggest, toughest football player looking guy in class, and I call him up to the front of the room. I say, okay, now I say, you know, what's your name? Michael. Okay, Michael doesn't want to go to that far wall over there, and I'm the boss. I want him to go to that far wall. And I start pushing on his back a little bit, and he gets the idea, and then he starts resisting. And so after a few seconds or maybe minutes, depending on how tough Michael is, we get to the other wall, okay? Because I will eventually get him over to that other wall. Now, I say, I'm probably at this point huffing and puffing, and I say, okay, now Michael wants to go to that other wall, and I want to go to that other wall. And then I take my little pinky and I point him in the back with my little pinky and we start walking. And it's a breeze. It's effortless. Why? Because leadership is the art of getting someone else to do something that you want done because he wants to do it. If he wants to go to that wall, it'll be a breeze to do it. Which is why what you need to do is have a shared values when you're going to accomplish whatever that mission is. If the values are shared, it's a whole lot easier than if you're trying to override the values of someone else. So I like the quote, but you have to give it the benefit of the doubt. Okay, the third one. This is brilliant. In preparing for battle, I've always found that the plans are useless, but planning is indispensable, right? There's another quote that no plan, and I don't think this is Eisenhower. I think this was someone else, but no plan survives first contact with the enemy. I think that was von Clausewitz or something. At any rate, in preparing for battle, he says, I've always found that the plans are useless, but the planning is indispensable. You throw the plans out the window once the battle starts, but the planning process helps you function in that battle. So the planning process does something to you, right? There's the process and then the product, and the process is as important, perhaps more important than the product. Okay, next one. Farming looks mighty easy when your plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles from a cornfield. So Eisenhower, I think, grew up in Iowa and Kansas. He grew up in Kansas. And so it's kind of a funny statement. But yeah, I mean, theoretically, something looks easy where, you know, in reality, when you have to do it for real, it's could be different. Okay, great quote next. The search for a scapegoat is the easiest of all hunting expeditions. Right? Just take responsibility when you need to take responsibility, because if you're searching for a scapegoat, you're going to find it. Oh, it's that department. It's those guys over there. Well, I did mine. And then you become very siloed in the organization and very bad things happen. Next one. And these are in no particular order. So I'm not building a theme. It's just the list of quotes. When I get to the end, the last few are more personal, but I'm not trying to build a systematic sense of Eisenhower's quotes. I'm just taking them as they came. Next one, you do not lead by hitting people over the head. That's assault, not leadership. Now, I know people that do this metaphorically, that do this emotionally, that lead people, they're just jerks. You just don't need to batter people. You inspire people if you want them to do well. You don't batter them. So you don't lead by hitting people over the head. That's assault, not leadership. Next, what counts is not necessarily the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. And I think that's right. I was talking to somebody about, he had posted something about a fight that he had been in years ago. He was a former military, and he was talking about like actual street fight with people. And they were outnumbered. It was like 6-2 or something like that. And he was talking about what happened in what sequence. And at some point, are saying, well, I think, half the battle is if you just take away their will to fight. I mean, he agreed, that's exactly right. How much will do you have to fight? Because if you can inflict certain pain, that makes you not want to continue to engage that fight. So what counts is not necessarily the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog. Next one, never let yourself be persuaded that any one great man, any one leader is necessary to the salvation of America. When America consists of one leader and 158 million followers, it will no longer be America. Now, Eisenhower ran for president. It's probably something that he said while he was president or running for president. The numbers have shifted. It's not 158 million now. America is now about 330 million, give or take. And so that shifted quite a bit. But the point still stands. Leadership is not about the one great leader. I remember I went to Lithuania a number of years ago. Now, Lithuania was one of the Soviet bloc countries that the Soviet Union had taken over after World War II, and they were under Soviet oppression until they finally, you know, Poland broke away and Lithuania was like number two or three to break away. They're reading the Constitution and going, hey, this says that we're free and independent states and we can leave at any time. So we'd like to leave now. And then tanks surround, the Soviet Union sends tanks to surround their parliament building. It's called the Seimas. I was at a conference in the Seimas. This is where I'm picking some of this up. I actually talked to the equivalent of their congressman, their representative that was inside that building when the tanks are surrounding it. They're unscrewing railings off the wall so they'll have something in their hand to fight with when it comes down to it. And the people in Vilnius, that's their capital city, came out, locked arms around the parliament building. It's the Seimas, six rows deep of just human chain, and the Soviets backed down. And Lithuania became free. Well, let me roll the clock forward. 10 years later, they are. That's when I got there. So this was like 1991. I visited in 2001 for the first time, and they're saying things like, "Well, if we just had one good leader to lead us." No, that's not how leadership works. Leadership has to be a cascading effect of leaders at each level. It can't be just one good leader at the top. That's a dictatorship telling everybody else what to do. Leadership is far less like I, the brain, am telling you, the body, and more like a nervous system that's all playing their own parts along the way. And so I hope that analogy helps you understand how this works. But, Ike was right. Never let yourself be persuaded that any one great man, any one leader is necessary to the salvation of America. Okay, next. The supreme quality for leadership is unquestionable integrity. Without it, no real success is possible, no matter whether it's a section gang, a football field, an army, or an office. And I think we've missed that in recent days. In the last, I don't know how long, we've kind of forgotten the character qualifications, and just, because we have, let's say, political leaders that, they lie, and we say, well, they lied, and it just goes on, nothing happens to them, and it doesn't really matter. So, but I think if you really want true leadership, true success in leadership, I think you need to keep your character sterling. And even if you are successful by scamming on something, that's not success. Okay, next, a sense of humor is part of the art of leadership, of getting along with people, of getting things done. So is a sense of humor important? Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's a small but overlooked quality of leadership. Next, never question another man's motive. His wisdom, yes, but not his motives. That is brilliant. And I think that's brilliant for a number of reasons. Like you ever have a conversation on Facebook where, or just in person with a friend where, how did you get that out of this? Like I said this thing and then you said this thing and you feel almost blindsided. Like, how can you think that that's what I was saying? Well, they're questioning your motive rather than the text of what you said. And it comes out very differently. And I experienced that yesterday where I said something and somebody said, well, that sounds awfully condescending when you say this. No, I told you, honestly, on face value, just hear what I had to say. But everybody thinks they're right. Like, nobody thinks they're the bad guy. Right? Nobody thinks like, well, I'm the bad guy and you're the good guy. So, really, you're right. I'm wrong. Nobody has that conversation. We all give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, right? So don't question their motive. They think they're operating right. Even in the Proverbs in the Bible, like the wicked, the Proverbs are talking about, they think that they're on correct paths, even if they're wrong. Okay? So even God is saying in the scripture that the wicked think that they're right. So if that's the case, never question another man's motive. His wisdom, yes, but not his motive. Okay, never send a battalion to take a hill if a regiment is available. I love that, right? So yeah, why would you do that? If you can overwhelm the other side, why make it harder on your side? It reminds me of a quote by Colin Powell. Powell is on this list as well. Of notable quotables. Colin Powell, who said something like during the Gulf War, he was asked why he only sent three carrier battle groups because he didn't have another to send at the time. He said, this is a gang fight. And he was talking about sending him to the Middle East for the invasion in Iraq in 1991. And yeah, he's right, because I didn't have another to send. This is a gang fight. That's exactly the way that you should be thinking about things. And, you know, give your people every, like, now translate this to the office. Your job as a leader is to equip your people and give them the tools that they need to get things done. Why would you ill-equip them? Why would you give them only half of what they need? Less straw, more bricks. Why would you do that? Equip them with what they need. Okay, next one. Pessimism never won any battle. That's right. That's good advice. Pessimism never won any battle. Optimism, this is Powell now, optimism is a force multiplier. If you're optimistic, you know, people catch your, you know, whatever your emotions are, and you as a leader are more catchy than other people, you are more likely to spread your emotions than someone down the line if you're a leader. So don't be pessimistic. People will catch that. Be optimistic. Now, I don't mean foolishly optimistic, but I mean optimistic. Think through what could be the possibilities. Next one, similar vein. Worry is a word I don't allow myself to use. And I think, you know, there's something very bright about that, that the Supreme Allied Commander is not going to think about that. Now, he's going to think through all the ramifications of everything, but what does worry do for you? Does worry make you any better? Does worry make you, does it make it more likely to happen? No, it just gnaws at you. I've adopted a similar policy where when there's something that I might need to worry about, I brace against it, but then I don't worry about it until we get to that point where we have to cross that bridge, because it just eats away and makes me less efficient, less effective. Okay, so worry is a word I don't allow myself to use. Next, the best morale exists when you never hear the word mentioned. When you hear a lot of talk about it, it's usually lousy. Yeah, I mean, when you talk about how, same thing, translate that to the office and you'll see an instant parallel. If you have to talk about morale, you probably don't have it. Next, I would rather try to persuade a man to go along, because once I have persuaded him, he will stick. If I scare him, he will stay just as long as he is scared, and then he is gone. That's right. But what do? We try to say, well, you better do this or else, or I'm going to come check on this or whatever. No, why don't you persuade? Why don't you inspire and persuade rather than demand and slam? Okay, don't do those things. If you do leadership right, a lot of things just fall into place. Now, we don't inspire and we don't persuade because we think it takes too long to do that. We'd rather just yell at someone or tell them what it is. Tell them this is how it's going to be because I'm the boss. When you do that, you're going to set yourself up for problems, and you don't see it, but it's so predictable. Think about the football player in my pinky. If he already wants to go that direction, it's easy. If I can persuade him that he wants to go that direction, from that point forward, it is light work. Otherwise, I'm going to be pushing this huge guy across the room, and it doesn't go easily. Okay, next. Leadership consists of nothing but taking responsibility for everything that goes wrong and giving your subordinates credit for everything that goes well. I love that. We have this weird tendency as leaders to want to take the credit for our subordinates. Never do that. Now, here's what you do. You give them all the credit plus some, and then you heap it on and you shout it from the rooftops. That makes them feel good. But you know what? Indirectly, you look good when you're giving them praise, not because you did it, but because you're smart enough to have a good employee like that, or smart enough to lead people who can get these kind of things done. Now, you don't point at you at all. You don't say, and by the way, I'm smart enough. No. You just let that be. Just heap the praise on them. Shine that, reflect that mirror back to them. It will be best for you if you shine on them. Okay. And I'm not trying to talk Machiavellian about how you'll look better either. I mean, I don't mean it like that. But if you try to take an ounce of their credit, everyone will know. And then you're going to look like an idiot. Okay. Don't do that. Next one. What's important is seldom urgent. And what's urgent is seldom important. Now, this made me think, so this was actually called the Eisenhower Decision Matrix, where and Covey popularized it and talked about it more. So you have a box, and you have what's urgent, and then on top you have what's urgent and what's not urgent, and then on the side you have what's important, and below that you have what's not important. So you have this 2x2 matrix, and if it's important and urgent, well, then you do it immediately. Okay? If it's important and not urgent, you decide what you're going to need to do and you schedule that. Now that's quadrant two. That's what Covey talks about, is where you really want to be, is spending most of your time in quadrant two. Now at the bottom, you have what's not important and urgent, and then you delegate that. And then what you have is not important and not urgent, you delete that. And now Covey talks about it a little bit differently than Eisenhower does, where you know, you really don't want to be on the bottom of that at all. And a lot of people spend their time wasting time doing things that are not important, even if they're urgent, or not important and not urgent. Covey's work in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People covers this, and so you can go look at that. But that's where he got it from. He just revised the Eisenhower decision matrix. Okay, so we have to move on. So what's important is seldom urgent, and what's urgent is seldom important. There's some insight there. Next, this is really interesting, and I had to think about this one for a while. Again, remember the comment from this 80-year-old? Actually, he was 85, and he was spry for 85 because he was taking a walk every day, so he wouldn't slow down. Okay, this 85-year-old Marine that worked for Eisenhower was talking about. He was a great strategist, so he said this: if a problem cannot be solved, enlarge it. And I thought, that doesn't make sense. Enlarge it. Why would you enlarge it? Aren't you supposed to break it down? But that's right. Enlarge it. To the degree that you enlarge it to the point where you're just seeing the most important part of it, you're staying on strategy. But sometimes we want to break it down and chunk it, and then we get lost in the minutia of those little pieces along the way. No, if you enlarge it, you see the one major theme that comes from it. The one, you know, the thing that you need to focus on most comes out of enlarging the problem. And I thought, you know, there's a reason that he's this great strategist. And listen, here's what I alluded to this earlier in the very beginning. Eisenhower never wanted to be where he went. I mean, like, so job after job, and again, I've read some biographies of Eisenhower, job after job, he kept getting staff jobs, and he never wanted staff jobs, right? Any good military leader worth his salt wants to be a commander of men, and he kept getting staff job after staff job after staff job. Well, at a certain point, he was the most qualified to, because he knew all these characters from these staff jobs, he understood the strategy from these staff jobs. Having worked as aides or staff positions for others. So he became the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe because Marshall needed him. Marshall needed to depend on him because of his vast experience in all these staff jobs to plan out D-Day invasion and to coordinate between the Allies and the Americans and to do all the functions that were needed for the Supreme Allied Commander. So All the preparation along the way, you could see it in hindsight, but you couldn't see it going into it. And while he didn't like this preparation, it was what paid off and what made him valuable. So again, here's the quote again: if a problem cannot be solved, enlarge it. Okay, the older I get, the more wisdom I find in the ancient rule of taking first things first, a process which often reduces the most complex human problem to a manageable proportion. That's another way of looking at strategy, of taking, okay, what has to come in what order or what sequence. And I think there's some wisdom there. Okay, these last few, I have three or four more, and I really like them. This is not about leadership, but he said, oh, that lovely title, ex-president. I think there are probably quite a few U.S. presidents who have thought that way. And I think if you still, you know, want to be the thing after your expiration date, something's probably gone wrong. That lovely title, ex-president. Oh, by the way, with that title, Eisenhower, you know, if you're a president, you know, you're still called Mr. President after you have left office. You keep that title by law. I mean, you're keeping the government allows you to keep the title of whatever. Eisenhower wanted to keep the title of general. And Kennedy had to sign off on this. And he was like, well, if he wants the lower title, that's fine. But that speaks a lot about Eisenhower's character and his demeanor and his the way that he thought about things was that he wanted to keep the title general rather than president after he left the presidency. Finally, here's the last one. Always try to associate yourself with and learn as much as you can from those who know more than you do, who do better than you, who see more clearly than you. And I think, you know, there's something very, very sound about that approach. If you're the smartest person in the room always, you're not learning anything. So surround yourself with people that are smarter than you, and you will continue to learn and grow. Okay, so that's all that I have on this episode of the podcast. And I hope that Ike's advice helps you become a better leader, that you can see more clearly about strategy and about leadership and about how you should function as a leader. Hey, listen, can you do me a favor? If you liked what you heard in this podcast, can you leave me a review? I would appreciate it. Your review will help me get noticed so that other people can hear this podcast and benefit from it. Thanks so much.